Blog Talk Radio.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the grandson, "There's a fight going on inside me. And this is a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf, this wolf is evil. It is anger, envy, sorrow, full of regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, it lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other wolf, though, the other wolf is good. This wolf is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, full of kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. Now, this same fight," he tells the grandson, "this same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person, too." The grandson, he sat there, thought about it, and he asked his grandfather, "Well, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Yeah.
Bienvenidos, ¿qué tal? Okay, namaste, and welcome. Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties. It's Wednesday, episode 442 on 420, 2022. You know, I love numbers. As I mentioned, my name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties, holding down the other half of our hosting duties. Some call him Unc, others call him the Lions Historian. I simply call him my best friend. He's my dad, Bill Green. Good evening. What's happening, Daddy-O? How's it going, man? How you doing?
And others call him the asshole.
Oh, yeah. We're on fire tonight, ladies and gentlemen. 420. We're on fire tonight.
420. You know, one day you got to explain to me the historical significance of 420. I was talking to a friend earlier, and she said she's going to get her 420 on later on this evening. You know, yeah. She said she had never really hadn't celebrated it in years, but, you know, she was going to crank it up. And I'm like, you know, huh? I kind of remember, you know, I kind of remember you mentioning it. She said, oh, yeah, today is National Weed Day. And I'm like, huh? So I kind of remember you mentioning it to me a couple of years ago. So, yeah, you know, but I still don't know the, you know, the historic significance of 420 Day. But, like, well, so, yeah, you know, hopefully we won't, hopefully we won't sound like we've been celebrating it hard.
No, that, I think everybody knows we're good. But let's just say we're considered it as an occasion for smoking or celebrating the smoking of marijuana. And we'll leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, all right. But you're going to still have to explain it to me one day when we're off the air in between, you know, whatever. But just give me the history of how that came to be. Because, you know, it seems like whenever I go on the Internet or Facebook, there's always a day. And I never know how did these days come to be, like National Grandparent Day. Okay, when did that start? You know, do they have National Dysfunctional Family Day? They should.
Wow.
So, yeah, anyway, needless to say, I'm feeling good today, man. It didn't start out good. I had a debilitating sinus headache when I woke up. But, you know, I did something I'd never done before. Actually, I felt it through the night, and it just intensified, you know. But I did something I'd never done before. I kind of did a non-medical cure, you know, and I didn't know it was a cure till it went away. But doggone it, you know, didn't work. You know, sometimes, you know, when we pray, you know, which can also include others, like my prayer line in those prayers, you know. And sometimes when we pray, I think we pray for instant gratification, you know, asking the Lord to alleviate whatever the circumstances we're dealing with. But sometimes the prayer is answered with, you know, with a recipe of what to do to feel better, so to say, what to do to, you know, satisfy the prayer, you know. And I always think of myself when I pray as a hapless victim. You know, I never thought of myself as being, you know, someone who has an active part in it. So today, you know, I took a hot shower, you know, then I let the water get as cold as I could stand it, you know, after I finished doing everything else. And then I got into, you know, my breathing, you know, my meditative breath work, you know, and just allowed my, you know, with no attached agenda, which is all but impossible to do, you know, because we're not trained on how to breathe, you know, we're kind of spoiled when it comes to breathing. We just think it's gonna do what it does until we die, and we won't know we stop breathing until we die. But Americans are notoriously shallow breathers. So a breathing exercise requires some effort, because what you want to do is, you know, breathe in a way that blocks out ego interference, you know, thoughts. And so it required in my breathing meditation, you know, to just go deeper and deeper and deeper until I felt the body relax in ways that I don't allow myself the opportunity to do, even though I know that's what breathing does. And I just felt things just start unwinding, man. You know, nice. Just, you know, like, beautiful. Just unwinding. You know what I mean? Like nerves, muscles, you know, even bones seem to, like, separate a little bit. The spine seemed to stretch. My hips seemed to relax.
Yes, sir.
And throughout the process, I wasn't thinking about my headache. But at the end, it was like, you know, it wasn't any preconceived end. Just when I stopped, whoa, what's up with this? You know, man, and it felt remarkably better, you know, remarkably better. And it's just been better ever since, you know. So not only do I smell better, but I feel better. I'm glad there ain't been nobody around here, man, for the last week or so, Jack, because I've been slave funky.
Let me give you some on that one.
Oh, man, that's awesome. When I walk out this crib, because I have a responsibility of feeding the birds and the squirrels and all the critters. So usually when I walk out the crib, they just, as they do, they just fly away till I, put all the food there, then they fly back. But it seemed like for the last couple of days, they were like flying away, but kind of looking over their shoulders like, damn.
Did you catch that human?
Yeah, whoa.
What's going on
with
that
guy? Don't know if we want to touch his food.
It smells funny.
Anyway, it's just funny, man. So anyway, there we are.
Right
there
on.
But go on, man. Yeah, go on and do your I'm gonna get out the way.
That's great to hear, Dad. I'm definitely digging it. I fully understand what you mean. It's good that you're stretching it out. It's like
There you go, right there. Stretching it out, man.
Stretching it out, man. That's awesome.
Stretching it out. Yeah.
Get a little detox. Yeah. Awesome, man. You're always in my prayers, and as much as
Amen.
I know, I'm in yours. So that's
Amen.
Good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good to hear. And I'm glad you put some soap and water. But anyway,
put some soap and water to it.
Put some soap and water to it. But moving along, just very briefly, ladies and gentlemen. It's already, we already see it's going to be a fun show tonight. But before we do really get going,
maybe not.
We already going. We want to make sure we remind you of a few things. The first thing we'd like to make sure that while you're listening, you have a pen and paper, a pencil and pad, a post-it note, a marker, the back of an envelope, a napkin. I don't know, something you got to write with. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you might pick up something you hear from us tonight. We want to just make sure you don't forget anything and you have these moments to record for yourself, So grab those few things. Mondays and Wednesdays, we have our live shows here on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseFX. That's the Greenhouse FX, the letter FX. You can engage with us a couple of different ways on our live shows, Mondays and Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can engage with us directly in the chat room on the website, Blog Talk Radio, with your free Blog Talk Radio profile or account. You can set everything up. Again, it's free. You can talk with us on the chat room. What's up, Adam? I see you there already. What's up, Primo? Thank you for, as always, your support. Or you can dial in and call us. Our number here, I'm sure you've got a pen and paper handy by now. Our number here is 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6091. And if you want to chime in, ask a question, or just say what's up, press the 1 button on your keypad, and we'll bring you in as soon as we can. We'll see your number in the queue. So, and of course, the Facebook event page is open as well, and you can use the discussion tabs to post any question or comments there as well. So there you have it from the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. So,
all right.
There you have it.
Okay. Good job. It's always. Yeah.
So
you got that down pat.
Sometimes it's like, okay, so now what? I just broke out a new notebook, so this is kind of fun already.
I could hear.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry. My apologies.
No, that's all right, man, because I muted myself to flip through some pages, because I don't want you to dance. You ain't got all that bracket.
There's something wrong with your mic, man. Check your earpiece. Check your earpiece.
Right.
So, Monday, by the way, which was an excellent show. I want to again just say a little something about Monday's show, man. That was really fun time to talk about Jackie Robinson and to hear your stories and even our opportunity to connect as well, as far as like baseball, just as an example, how would it connects us. So that was a really fun time.
Right on. Absolutely.
And Monday we kind of hinted that we were going to talk something about the evolution of the word wipe. A few weeks back, we even had a discussion on the origin of the word black or Negro. You know, like, who were the Negroes? How did Africans become Negro? And we had a couple of episodes when we dealt and talked about those, that topic. But recently, you know, again, as I mentioned on Monday, we posed the talking point, if you will, of looking at the history or the evolution of using the word or the term white to describe a race. Tonight, I thought it'd be a good night. We can jump into it. But before we do get into that, I know there's something else that you wanted to bring to our attention as well.
Well, it's not something else. It's always the well, for me anyway, it's always the danger, I'll use that word, of thinking I know where I'm heading, only in the pursuit of what I think I know what I want to do, not prepared for when something else comes along and broadsides me. You know, so we had this big topic, right? And before a few weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, Negroes. How did that, you know, how did Africans become Negro, and where is Negro land? You know, we cited a few references and so forth, but we were still able to sketch out a history of the evolution of the word and how, you know, how that word became synonymous to a race. You know, even though that race didn't have a land that it could say it came from. You know, because we always thought it was Africa, you know, and it's like, okay, so Negro land must exist somewhere, but it only existed in the imagination, you know, of those who were, I assume, determined to invalidate, you know, a whole race, you know, so let's erase one race and let's invent another, and let's be sure in the invention of the other that there's no ties to the previous. Thus, you know, Negro. And that worked until, you know, Negroes got tired of being Negroes. Right? And said, yeah, they got to be something more than just, you know, this make-believe thing. So then Negroes became black. So, okay, that's great, right? All right, so that's the real quick synopsis of a show we did. Really, that, what, covered about 2 weeks, maybe four shows? It kind of got pretty intense, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought it did at one point, you know, and then not too long ago, it just kind of crept up on me, right? You know how that goes, minding your own business and a thought comes along. And I never really completely disconnected from those shows we did on, you know, the origins of black and how Negro evolved, because it had a direct impact on me directly, you know, like, you know, when we moved from being Negro to black, that really happened in the 60s. And I like to say I'm a child of the 60s, meaning that was kind of like my rebirth in many ways. And I've had more than one. I've had several, as you have and as everybody has, whether we know it or not.
Amen.
You know, so the thought came out of nowhere. It's like, okay, we got this one part, you know, and it just seemed, when it came to me, it just seemed to make sense where, well, if we got a black, there must be a white. So it's like, hello, you know, how did America become white? Where is white land? You know, the same question. So, you know, I thought, okay, let's dust off your research boots and let's go explore the world and find where white land is. And needless to say, I never found it, all right? Just cut to the chase. But still, how did this thing become synonymous of this country that is so colorphobic that it has divided its people among racial lines, really color lines? You know, that's the thing. You know, all the color lines for all the other races, you know, divided up, but white stayed white. But white ain't a race. You know, white's really not even a primary color. You know, the primary color is all found in the rainbow. You don't ever see a white in the rainbow. So, you know, and white's not capitalized. You know, black is only because it's the derivative of Negro, which Negro was supposed to be the race of people that we were born from. So nobody's born from white. You know, there's just no such thing. So how did that come to be? And that's what this is. And it, believe me, there's no way it can even come close to completing itself in one show. The only question is, you know, how much do we really want to get into it in future shows? But just for the sake of conversation tonight, you were alluding to the fact that there was something else I kind of want to do as a precursor or a prelude to talking about the history of, you know, of white people. That sounds funny to say, the history of white people. And it has to do with this thing I was broadsided by, you know, as I was just heading, you know, through the internet to get ready for tonight. And it has to do with this thing that popped out, man. And I'm sure everybody knows about it except me and you, right? It can't be that we found something that nobody else knows. So since we found it, everybody must know. And it has to do with this former Virginia school administrator who claims that she was forced out of her job after a slip of the tongue during a racial training exercise. You know, and of course now she's suing the school district, and it's out of Virginia in Charlottesville. You know, Abermarley, I'm not sure if that E is silent, County Public School System. She was, and all the employees were required to attend like a racial training program. You know, so the lawsuit filed this month, you know, not too long ago, by Emily Mays, M-A-I-S, alleges that, of course, it alleges, that's what she's saying, that white employees in the public school system were placed in a no-win situation when they participated in a racial equity training. Now, I'm not sure what equity means in this context, you know, a racial equity training. Equity usually has something to do with something being fair. So maybe that's what it's saying, you know, some kind of fairness training on racial lines. Anyway, Mays claims that she was retaliated against for questioning the anti-racist program designed to educate, you know, and designed for educators. The training was based on a Glenn Singleton handbook. I don't know who Glenn Singleton is, and I sure don't have access to the handbook. But between now and next week, I will know something about it. You can bet on that. And it is called Courageous Conversations About Race, that provides educators with an understanding about the racial equity and the systemic implications of racism. Now, I think you can kind of feel where this is heading, right? You know, we have this situation in a very volatile area of the country, you know, Virginia and then Charlottesville. And we know a lot of the crap that's going on, a lot of the issues that have happened in Charlottesville, you know, do we need to even highlight them? But there's been a lot of racial unrest there, right? I think it's safe to just put it that way, over the last 3 or 4 years, at least, where it's really been drawn into the social eye. But, of course, it's been going on for a while. So during the last training session in June 2021, this all started in November 2020, and it went on through to June 2021. Mays accidentally used the term colored people instead of people of color. And according to the lawsuit, she immediately apologized for what she called, or what the lawsuit refers to as, a derogatory term. You know, and so I guess it's derogatory to say colored people. You know, but it's only recognized as derogatory if you were supposed to say people of color. And I guess that's part of what the training was intended to do, to help, you know, synthesize, you know, make people a little bit more sensitive, you know, to context of various verbiage used in relation to, you know, black and white issues. Before I even finish this up, let me just ask you. Okay, anyway, let me finish it up right quick.
What's up?
Now, we're just for the sake of dialogue, we're a generation apart, right? If somebody calls you colored, if they called you colored, not, you know, with the intent to insult, or maybe even with, who knows, but, you know, like if somebody said to you, when are you colored people going to stop acting like that? Would it be the not acting like that that you would react to, or would it be being called colored that you would react to? That's one side of it. And if somebody was just talking to you and you heard the person say, you know, I really like colored people, you know, how does that work with you, the word colored as reference to black folks?
Rather, it was meant to hurt or to not. I know my first reaction would be to snicker, you know. And then regardless of, again, the intention, the next approach would be to try to educate. But I don't see myself, because, you know, I have moments of reacting and, you know, not being cool. But I think that moments like that provide an opportunity to educate. And I think in this case, it's just like, again, the proper use of words. And there are people who honestly, they don't know. I mean, we can joke around and be like, oh, you've been under a rock, you know, but maybe actually they were from another country. You know, maybe they haven't interacted with a lot of black people or African Americans or Negroes or colored people of America, you know. You know, that would be my immediate reaction to that situation. But it
wouldn't
be.
Would you have the same? Go ahead.
Would I have the same what?
No, go ahead. Would you have the same reaction to colored as you would hearing people use the same conversation but then use the word nigger?
You know, now I would say I think that I would still have a similar demeanor and not overreact even with the use of the word nigger. And because in my most recent experience, I've heard like kids, the way kids use it. And I mean like Latin kids, not even black kids. I'm talking like.
Okay, but I'm talking about white. And I'm talking about white in a similar situation of training or whatever the case may be. And you're hearing somebody use the word colored, would the same person using the word nigger affect you the same way as them using the word colored? That's what I'm asking, really. Maybe I wasn't clear enough.
I mean, I just that my patience wouldn't be as strong with somebody using the word nigger as it would be with somebody using the word colored if I'm trying to have a conversation with this person. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it makes sense, but you're answering the question. I mean, it's left up to the millions.
The millions?
you know, just to take a poll, I mean, your answer is your answer. You know, it doesn't require, you know, a poll to determine if it makes sense or not. It, you know, like, yeah, it's your answer. Yeah, I mean, so there was a time for me early on that, you know, nigger was, you know, that's it. You know, that's as down and ugly as you can get. But still colored, you know, tweaked me, you know, as it did my elders, you know, calling us colored instead of Negro, you know, was in a sense maybe not as derogatory as it was insensitive. You know, and of course the shifting tide generationally was when I separated from my elders by moving to the word, you know, black or Afro-American, you know, which was for them appalling, you know, we're Negroes, you know, we're Americans who were, anyway, you know, the argument would be, but it was like we've been trained to be Negroes, you know, not trained to be black. You know, black was derogatory. It was more derogatory than color to my elder. I mean, you had the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, you know, I mean, colored was what was used. Du Bois speaks about colored in so many of his writings. So it was recognized as being all-inclusive of people of color, colored people, you know, but used derogatorily. You know, I just think it's interesting in the contrast of the years. LBJ, as we talked about in previous shows, was known all the way almost to the end, you know, because it's what he was used to saying. He called black folks niggers. You know, he ain't call them Negroes. He ain't call them niggers. You know, that was acceptable in his circle here in Texas. You know, I mean, it's still, you know, acceptable in the far reaches of the South. Well, the near reaches too. You know, if you want to be careful not to say nigger, you say nigra and still get your point across. You know, so I just was thinking, I just wanted to ask you what your reaction would be, you know, if you heard somebody in a sensitivity training program who is white, who is kind of against the whole idea of the training program anyway, use the term colored people instead of people of color and then apologize right away for it before anybody got in her face. You know, to me, that would have seemed to defuse the situation. You know, I can't help but to feel, though, that there's other issues going on, you know, and the other issues going on, I don't think has changed that much since the 1700s. You know, I think the other issues going on is still, again, what I wanted to know why, and the only way I could think to answer that, because I can't find it out in my race, because we're not the perpetrators of it. We didn't create this. You know, it has to be an answer in, well, how did this white thing even come to be? Because it's not a race. So that's what the whole background. So this story just caught my attention for that very reason. And anyway, just to wrap it up right quick, I'm just going to jump ahead because I think we filled in everything that needs to be said about it. So she resigned from her job because she felt that, you know, she was bullied to resign because after this incident, you know, she held on to her job that she stated she loved for as long as she could, which was about 6 months. And she just felt she had to leave because she was under constant, you know, attacks by her colleagues. So she left in September. But then she hired, you know, a legal team called the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a conservative Christian legal advocacy group. You know, so, and maybe I'm just old, but it somehow suggests, oh, well, maybe there's more passive-aggressive behavior going on than we're willing to recognize.
Yeah.
She goes out and gets, you know, this particular, you know, legal team. And what this particular legal team stands for, but again, I have to look it up because I don't want to speculate. You know, it's a conservative, however, if it's a conservative Christian legal advocacy group, I got a pretty good idea what they're about. You know, like, I love the words conservative and liberal, you know, anyway. So I'm just going to, so it's like, for me, the question is, so, is it just assumed that black people are liberal, and is it just assumed that white people have the option of being liberal or conservative? Because we don't give much play to black conservatives at all. I mean, like, you know, we beat up on Tim Scott and Uncle Clarence Thomas. I'm sorry, Justice Clarence Thomas. You know, and a few others like that boy West. I can't remember his first name, out of Florida. You know, and people like Herman Cain, you know, we just kind of beat up on them, you know. And so it's like we expect a liberal kind of behavior from black folks, you know. And then if you're going to be black, conservative, and Republican, it's like, damn, you know, what's your point? So I don't know if there is a requirement of being black in America any more than I don't know if there's a requirement of being white in America, but it seems that there is a kind of privilege that comes with one calling themselves white in America that doesn't really mean much anywhere else, because anywhere else we're just Americans, you know. So anyway, All that, looking at this story, which just kind of highlighted it all. I know it drained a lot of the time from the show, and I apologize. But to me, it just gave a little up-to-date dialogue around this ongoing issue that never tracks back over history to understand the roots that, to me, would explain why these behaviors even exist in this country in the first place. It seems to me that all of that should have been eradicated with the birth of this, what they call what now, the great experiment. You know, I ain't never liked that. You know, I hate democracy as being referred to as the great experiment, because this experiment seems to have parts to it. It's like, okay, the great experiment for white people, you know, but then what's the great experiment for black people? And then what's the great experiment for black people who are in prison? And then what's the great experiment for black people who go through these experiments like the Tuskegee experiment, you know, and people don't seem to understand why black folks like you, I'm going to pick on you, react to what? You want me to take this shot for what? I ain't taking that shot. I don't know what the hell y'all putting in me. I'm still trying to understand what happened with this syphilis experiment on black men in the 40s, you know. So, yeah. You know, it's like, and then you're a conspiracy theorist anyway, you know. I love how your mama dealt with you with that regard. You know, you could just talk to me through the door. You can say something if you want, man. I'm sorry. I'm kind of ragging on you a little bit.
But no, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So
I'm just glad that you broke down liberal, conservative, and Republican. I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you. I was having some issues trying to really understand the three, you know, honestly. And just listening to you now, I have a better idea on how it's categorized, if you will, quote unquote.
Yeah. And it's
so
not
no,
fixed. It's fluid. It's fluid. So it depends on the atmosphere of the country. You know, just because, like right now, conservatism, you know, suggests a rigid, you know, opposition to civil rights, so to say, equal rights, fairness, equity, whatever, you know, the term is that people can digest. You know, it's like conservative somehow gives people the opportunity to question, you know, whether it's fair to do things equally. It's kind of trippy, ain't it? You know, and liberals, like, there's only one way. You know, there's not even the other way. It's like, you know, this, everybody deserves what the Constitution dictates, but the Constitution wasn't written for everybody, you know. We can overlook and we could just assume that it meant everybody, but, you know, when you read things that constantly highlight men, you know, and not humankind, you know, one has to ask themselves, is this just an accident of assumption, or is this a statement of personal feeling, you know, that this is a patriarchal system? It's male driven, it's white male driven, and everything has to evolve from that attitude and approach toward whatever it is that the issues of the day argue. It's all going to come back to what I feel, you know, is a very backbone. And I realize that, you know, this is going to cause some of my, you know, closest non-black friends, you know, to maybe get a little burr in their saddle. You know, I just feel that it all relates back to, you know, a white supremacist attitude that gave birth to this country. You know, it was only 6% of the population that developed the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and every parchment of law, you know, that existed for this country. And that 6% were all rich white men who owned property. And anybody who didn't fall into that category was not included with the development and inception of this country. However, You know, it was written in such a way that it left room for amendments, but still, the amendments weren't meant to include all the people that weren't white. You know, that was very clear in all the arguments about opposed to even coming up with this Constitution, you know, and this Bill of Rights. So to me, when it's all said and done, if this argument isn't a part of known American history, then this attitude of white will always suggest some abstract assumption that white is in fact a race, and white is in fact a majority race, and white is in fact then the power that does dictate social policy for everyone else to respond to, you know, but the power rests in, you know, no pun included, the White House. Yeah, and that's not an intentional view that is meant to cast all white people as racist. However, there's an option there, you know, and that option to me is only driven by one's conscience, you know, but still with the clear luxury of no matter which way the wind blows in America, if you're white, you're white. You know, so it's whether it's a Trump, whether it's a Biden, whether it's a Bush, whether it's an Obama, you know, it doesn't matter how the tide turns. In the end, you're still white. And in the end, you're still considered to be the majority rule. And in the end, I'm still considered to be a minority. Now, that's the game of America, that if that's not a supremacist attitude, I don't know what is. You know, if you can, you know, so see yourself as the one who decides who the minorities are, where did that power come from? So to me, that's the assignment, you know, like for me to unravel this great mystery and see how this race of people that, what, evolved from, you know, Europe, you know, or European culture, you know, came to a country already inhabited by those who had their own way of life, and then so dictated, what, through manifest destiny, that it was their God-given right, you know, to restructure the land and, in fact, divide it up among themselves, you know, and make rules that accommodated the dividers. And all who didn't apply or didn't fit, you know, they run out of town. Well, run out of town became run out of country. They were just pushed aside or having to do these horrible migratory things that just said, you can no longer live here, and we're going to tell you where you're going to reside, you know, and still living there, you know. So for me, it was just a matter of needing to understand how could this come to be, and where could this power have evolved from. And so I'm interested to read my man's book on, you know, the history of white, you know, people. But still, it's not as much involved to me as it is about looking at, you know, the term white race or white people, you know, and how it came to be in the major European languages in the 17th century, you know, in the context of racialized slavery and unequal social status in the European colonies. So my questions are pretty, you know, simple for me to investigate. You know, where did white people come from? You know, did a genetic mutation lead to the evolution of the white race? You know, what is the difference between white and Caucasian? And also there's this thing called the Gottingen School of History. And in that school of history, there's an explanation of that answers all these questions. You know, including, you know, this genetic mutation. Now, I know that sounds kind of far-fetched, but people not knowing the history of this world would need to understand there was a time when everybody who made up the world, all of their eyes were brown. you know, and over a time of whatever, you know, genetic themes and however they played out, eye color evolved. It wasn't, you know, do you feel me, man?
Yeah, yeah.
Or am I just talking in loops here? It's like, you know, as much as we have clamored about the importance of America teaching black history, I think it's equally important for America to teach white history so we can understand how this country has evolved into this clash of color and race, you know, because neither was designed to have to live this way. Neither. You know, white America evolved from European status. Black America evolved from African status, and both became the product of this sexual abuse of African women. You know, I mean, these things cannot be ignored, but yet and still they're never talked about. It's so like the dysfunctional family, the functionally dysfunctional family. You know, and America is a functional dysfunctional family. You know, it still operates on the context of democracy, even though that democracy is not fair and equal, but everybody knows what it is, and everybody knows that it ain't fair and equal, but everybody deals with the idea that we're working toward it becoming that instead of, wait, what do you mean? That's what it's supposed to be. But we, you know, man, I remember, you know, not too long ago, I'm so sorry that, you know, there aren't certain folks online right now who could corroborate this, but I remember, you know, early on when I was a shorty, you know, people spoke in hushed terms, black folks did,
mm-hmm.
about,
yeah.
you know, describing people of color. Like if you were talking about, well, you know, he's white, he would say about, you know, and if, yeah. And then, you know, we would stumble around trying to, well, you know, is he colored? You know, was he a Negro? You know, it's like, you know, we never quite were comfortable with, they never were quite comfortable. And in terms, then I wasn't comfortable with knowing exactly what to call us and when was it safe to call them, you know. So we just kind of had these fixed languages that just hid what the questions and concerns were. So like if you were stopped by the cops, you know, and if you were treated unfairly, the first question was he white or black? Because, you know, white cops are much more fair than black cops. I mean, that's what I grew up hearing, you know, and without giving a historic context to that, it just made this strange idea begin to unfold in my mind that if anybody black worked for the government, FBI, whatever, Senate, the Supreme Court, you know, if they put on those uniforms, and they must not have my best interests in mind. But then even still, in modern time, fast forward, you know, how could modern history deny the truth about the disparities and the differences between Thurgood Marshall and Clarence Thomas? We ain't even talking about your girl yet, you know, KBJ, you know, and how could that have even, you know, become an issue when, you know, I mean, Carol Day O'Connor, was that her name? The first female, Day O'Connor, I'm just not sure of her first name, Susan Day O'Connor, Carol Day, you know, help us out, Adam. Anyway, he might be gone. it's all these things.
Sandra.
I don't know, man.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
Thanks,
Adam.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, thanks, Adam. You know, this is like we're dealing backwards history. So I read this thing about what happened in Charlottesville. This should be something read from 300 years ago, not 300 years later. You know, how could racial equity training, you know, still be a theme of struggle where people just should be able to say, you know, I was never raised to treat everybody equally.
You mean you're going to open up some healthy dialogue?
I mean, see, this is what I'm saying, man.
Yeah.
I wasn't raised to treat everybody fairly. I wasn't raised to even think about anybody outside of my immediate surrounding, my immediate family. You know, I was always raised to think I better learn how to get mine, you know, and leave it up to you to get yours. And, you know, I was always raised to believe that not only I could be president, but I should be if I want to be. You know, those kind of dialogue, you know, should be the ones we're having today. Not these issues about attending a training that, you know, I really didn't. You know, I'm from Charlottesville, Virginia, and I know the issues that happen in the school system. I still don't see the reason why I need to go to any kind of sensitivity training on racial equity, you know, even though I know this is the themes that surround us in this city. It doesn't affect me directly because I don't sit on that side of the bus.
Now, who says that?
No, it's me just speculating that that should be the conversation. I mean, that should be, you know, that should have been the conversation 300 years ago, not now having that conversation. I mean, that's in essence what, she, you know, that story, that thing I talked about regarding, you know, the, what was her name again? Ms. Mays.
Oh.
You know, the issue has to do with her being forced to attend this equity training. You know, what was her name? So I get it straight. Last name Mays, first name, I can't find it right now. Of course I can't because I'm looking for it. You know, any other time it would pop right up at me.
Emily.
Emily. There you go. Emily Mays. You know, right on with somebody listening.
Jazz hands.
You know, that story that she's talking about, oh, that should have happened 300 years ago. You know, it should have at least happened 160 years ago. As soon as this Emancipation Proclamation was signed, everybody should have gone to some racial equity training. You know, that should have been the course to follow once it was the law of the land, and not 100 years later still fighting for the same thing that the Emancipation Proclamation declared was now legal. We're still fighting for something 160 years old. And we're having these kind of conversations, you know, now, you know, about resisting the idea of needing to go to these kind of training. You know, so where does this evolve from, and why are we doing it backwards? So anyway, maybe next Monday I'll talk a little bit more in detail about, you know, the evolution of you know, this dominant culture and how it came to be in America. I mean, because let's just look at the reality of our time that we live in. You know, black folks are not treated fairly. People of color are not treated fairly when it comes to fair as written by the Constitution of today. You know, there is still this abbreviation that somehow suggests the dominant culture, you know, I'm not saying majority, I said dominant. And to me, dominant means those who, in fact, dictate social policy still have the luxury of deciding what fair is and what it isn't. You know, that, man, you know, that's a hell of a thing, you know, for everybody else to have to live under. Eh, that's just more reason why I hate the word minority, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, you can call me anything, you know, but don't call me minority. You know, that is so much of an insult. I mean, because white people don't call themselves the majority. You know, that's just assumed. They don't ever say, you know, I'm a majority race. You know, no, that's just assumed. It assumes that they have the right to call me a minority because it's assumed that we already know they're the dominant culture. Therefore, they get to dictate social policy, and the social policy of the day is you're a minority, you know. And feel better about that because 300 years ago, you were three-fifths of a person. So at least now we're saying, you know, that you're a whole part of a lesser whole.
Of this lesser part. I see you,
yeah.
But you're still less than what I am.
Yeah. And I get to prove that. Because I'm the one who runs the United States Census Bureau. So I count you the way I count you.
12%. 12%.
You know, has never change. Now, I don't know what part of the world, a part of this world everybody else come from, but there's no way in the world anybody gonna tell me that black folks have not grown in numbers, you know. Anyway, we're talking about, I start getting overly sexual in my comments. But look here, man. Anyway, so, future shows, we'll talk about that. And but one thing I did, do I have time to talk about one other thing, or do I need to just shut up now?
No, man, you're good. So let me just say this real quick. And I'm going to look up this Emily May situation in Virginia. Just that whole thing just sounds really, just from the training and whatever else is going on in that school system, this sounds like a lot more to it, than just this one particular situation.
Really, it isn't. Yeah. Really, it isn't. But, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, feel free.
Oh, okay.
To. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm just
but,
saying. Just check it out.
It's the lawsuit. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you going to say?
No, go ahead and finish, man. Finish. Finish.
No, that was it. I was just saying that it just sounded like it's more, something more to.
You think I'm holding out?
No. I'm just saying as far as what's going on out there.
Okay.
Excuse me. What else were you?
What
was up?
Well, it's part of this whole exploration of white history led me to, of all people, H.G. Wells. You remember the movie, The Time Machine? I'm saying the movie because most of us don't bother with the book anymore. So maybe I need to get his book, The Time Machine, and because I imagine there are going to be things in the book that, the movie doesn't, have time to highlight. But H.G. Wells, this is the author, right, of The Time Machine, the movie, the Eloy and the Morlocks, you remember?
Yeah.
Not the remake, with your boy Guy Pearce, but the original with Rod Taylor. H.G. Wells argued that across Europe, North Africa and the Horn of Africa, West Asia, Central Asia, and South Asia, a Caucasian physical stock, I'm not sure what that means, but a Caucasian physical stock existed. He divided this racial element into two main groups, a shorter and darker Mediterranean or Iberian race and a taller and lighter Nordic race. Wells asserted that Semitic or Hamitic populations were mainly of Mediterranean type and Aryan, you heard that word, right, populations were originally of Nordic type. Now, I have to really believe, not assume, I have to believe that that was the crux of his book, The Time Machine. I haven't read it, so I don't know. I just know that the movie is based on the book. And the Eloi were what? They were the surface people. They all had blonde hair, and they all were white.
Right.
Now, you remember the Aryan race, the whole thing of Hitler's postulation of the dominant race, Aryan.
The master race.
The master race, blonde hair, blue eye.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm watching The Time Machine as a shorty. I mean, what was that when it came out? I was probably like maybe 14, 13, and like, ooh, wah, Skippy. Yeah, man, what a movie. And if I can stay out of my racial context, it still is. It was fun to watch. But today I can't ignore the fact that, wait a minute, the Eloi had absolutely no people of color. Black, Asian, Indian. Well, it's going to be no Indians. No Indians, Indians, Indians just, anyway, man, I'm talking about Native Americans. I'm not talking about East Indians. Yeah, East Indians get more play than Native Americans do in movies. And the Morlock, you remember the Morlock? They were slumped, bent
mutated.
Over.
Yeah.
And they had
rough.
Mutated. And, they had darker skin. They had eyes that glowed in the dark. But they also had blonde hair. so it's like, what my man is, you know, like what his book and what the movie really showed was, you know, what my man's study seemed to suggest. You know, it's clear division among racial terms, you know, that there was a shorter, darker Mediterranean or Iberian race, which is interesting because Iberia is now Portugal, but that's another story for another time. You know, and the taller and lighter Nordic, you know, people were of Aryan, you know, types. So there's a superiority, inferiority thing going on. And, of course, you know, the Morlocks were the bad guys, and the Eloi, you know, rose up in arms because this white man told them how to, you know, how to fight for their rights that they didn't even know they had. Well, then that means they were slaves. You know, I mean, man, you know, there's so many twists and turns. Anyway, I just had to inject that. Sorry, Will, you know, to me, worthy of further investigation. All right.
Absolutely. A lot. So, yeah, that's kind of, I guess this would be more or less an introduction, if you will, to this discussion even further, something more to look forward to next week. Because, I mean, there's, you know, like I said, there's a lot of things that I need to look back over, and even just present day times, looking at the situation in Virginia. You mentioned this book, Courageous Conversations About Race. This handbook. And even this book we mentioned before the show, The History of White People, I think that was 2010.
2010, right on.
Yeah.
Hey, man, check you out.
And let me ask you this. So in doing this research and looking these things up, there was one other piece, and you mentioned him earlier today, W.E.B. Du Bois. So are you familiar with, he wrote something called The Souls of White Folks, right? I know there's the black folks, but there's something else about Souls of White Folks.
I don't know. You tell me.
I'll look it up and bring it back next week then. So that's my homework for next week. Yeah, I got some work to do, people.
Wow.
Check some stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that when you first approached this idea, I think we both knew that they were, you know, immediately these rabbit holes or these black holes or white holes.
I'm tired of it all tumbling into a black hole. Let's put some light on it. Yeah, you know? Turn them into white holes so people can see this shit. You know, stuff. I need to stop cussing.
I kicked that mother. Hey, it's after 8 o'clock.
Hey, Will, calm down, man. Don't nobody know what you're talking about.
It's after 8 o'clock, so you're okay. Like I said, we've got some follow-up to do, and I knew this was going to be a very interesting topic, and obviously you did. And at the same time, it sounds like you're, I guess there's a little joy involved as far as when it comes to learning new things, right? Even though there's you know, these moments of course, the emotional connection to it when we talk about race and looking at this situation that we're in America. But still just, you know, that kind of, I don't know, the good with the bad, whatever it is. So
I don't know anything about the good with the bad. It's like there got to be a truth. You know, there has to be a truth, however it goes. I mean, you know, like Patrick, what is it, Loyola or Lyola? Loyola? Loyola? Okay, Loyola. Okay. This ain't ancient history. This is like something that just happened. You know, it's like, man, you know, it's like I don't get to control the news, so therefore I can't put emphasis on the importance of the day based on my values. You know, I have to keep reading these things by the way, black men are still being, you know, murdered right before your very eyes. You know, see, there's this constant social imbalance that the powers that be dictate what is fair and what isn't. That's what drives me crazy, man, and that's what you know, that's what fuels my fire of fear when it comes to my sons, you know, knowing that, you know, what is supposed to be designed for my son's protection, I have no control over how they decide what's fair and what isn't in regards to how you guys are treated. Yeah, man, it's just something. Anyway, sorry, man, you know, tripping.
No, you ain't tripping, Dad. I don't think you're tripping at all.
This ain't getting no better, man. You know, I mean, so that's, you know, this is bad, and it's getting worse. You know, maybe there are, you know, small steps being made toward social justice. Okay, good. Maybe we need to do a show that shows that, you know, because I ain't feeling it, man. Everything I see is social upheaval, you know. But the issues of voter rights, the issues of human rights, of civil rights, you know, are still in debate, and the powers that be are still playing these games of changing, like, what is it, color lines based on how they can manipulate whatever these division lines are called in political arenas that dictate who's going to vote for who. You know, I mean, and then even changing the rules about how you can vote. You know, and still today, there's not a day that passed that I don't see that Trump's name is still, you know, thrown into the mix. I mean, how can that? You know, man, you know, that's. But that's important to them. But, of course, Newsweek thinks what's important to us is to hear that Tupac was offended when Jada asked him not to attack Will Smith.
Oh, man. You're hitting it all, man. You are on fire tonight, man. You are hitting it all tonight. Wow.
What's up, man?
Wow.
You know, what? Now, if I remember, now help me, because, you know, I'm old and I'm out of date. Didn't Tupac Shakur die?
Yeah, yeah, that story is before.
And how long ago did he die?
Yeah, but that story is like a long time ago, right?
Right, yeah, it would have to be, right? Because he'd been dead for a minute. So you know, but see, he died in the 20th century. He didn't even die in the 21st century. And this century is already 22 years old, you know. So what the hell does that have to do? Oh, man. Anyway, but that's the way the game is played, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I need to find this book written by Faraya Chidea called Who Monitors the Media? You know, she wrote it back in the early, I think 2002, somewhere around there, maybe 98 even. But, you know, there's the question right there. You know, who monitors the media? You know, I know we don't.
No.
All right, man, I'm done. Thank you, man. I know I took us into overtime again. I apologize.
Well, hey, don't apologize. Definitely had a lot of use for the pen and paper, at least for me today.
My man, yeah, thank you, man.
A lot of stuff to look at. So yeah, definitely looking forward to, you know, doing some work, doing some homework, and hitting this hard Monday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, ladies and gentlemen. Please check it out. Come back
and I owe Adam another apology because we, you know, even though he didn't put his hand up, because that's what it looks like, your hands up when you go into the queue, like me. You know, I did promise that we would, you know. So, I'm sorry, Adam. Maybe next week, bro. Keep hanging in there, man. Keep doing our follow-up, backup research. You know you love and you know you appreciate it. And you know you're a part of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like he was, like, multitasking. You know, he had the show on, but he was, like, in and out the chat room. I guess he's working or something. So, but he's there as always. So, yeah, thank you.
As always, man. Right on, man. Yeah, he's our man behind. He's the man behind the camera.
Let's go to our man on the scene.
Yeah. So look, what I'm just putting out there. Just take a minute. I know you're going to say, "Well, damn, Dad, you could have just mentioned this, you know, after we're done." I think I know what I want to do on Saturday. I think I want to make it an open AA meeting. Yeah. So I just leave it at that. Yeah, and we talk about it later. But I think that's what I'm going to start doing. Saturdays from 10 to 11:30. Yeah, an open AA meeting. That means anybody can join. Anybody can listen. Anybody can come.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. All right. I didn't mean to create dead air.
Sorry about that. All right. I'm processing, like thinking, like, okay, you know,
yeah,
already how it's going to look.
Yeah.
I was going to look. So, all right.
Just come to the chase. All right, man. Yeah.
So you're not looking
Saturday,
at. Oh, okay. That was my. I was just about to ask you, like, do you mean this Saturday?
No.
So, yeah, okay. No. See, these are questions to ask, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I kind of know my dad a little bit.
All right, man.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Great show. Love you, son.
All right, Dad. Love you, too, man. Appreciate everything you provided tonight. Thank you so much.
Same here, man. Thank
so,
you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show, where we offer and provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and excuse me, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. I'm Will. That's Bill over there. Until
I'm
Monday,
Bill.
That's Bill. We hope that you all stay safe, stay blessed, and most importantly, be yourself, because everybody else is taken. You know, take care of each other. Have a good weekend. Love you, Dad.
Love you, Will.
Good night, everybody.
Amen. Amen.